It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Today's episode is brought to you by the folks over at SeatGeek, the best and easiest to use ticket platform out there. They take the confusion out of buying tickets using a 0 to 10 scoring system and a green is good, red is bad color rating system so you and your loved ones get the best deal possible. So whether it's going to see our beloved Red Legs at Great American Ballpark, the Bengals over at Paycor, FC Cincinnati, one of the area college teams, or pretty much anything in between, use promo code RIVERFRONT at checkout and receive $20 off your first order. Click the link in the show notes to download the app and get started. That's RIVERFRONT, one word, for $20 off.
Can't get enough of that intro music. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Bengals Show, presented by the Riverfront. I am your host, Joe Farsing. Along with my regular co-host, Greg Niemann. And to my right, left. I still cannot get these. My right, screen left. Wow, I got it easy.
I got it easy today. This is perfect.
I can switch that. I have the ability.
Don't please.
I never figure that out. Anyway, Tim Daniel from Late Night Reds. Tim, Greg. Fellas, how we doing on this frigid day in Cincinnati?
I'm amazed it took 24 years for Greg and I to work on something together.
Yeah,
this is the first time. All this time we've known each other. It's the first time we've ever like had the mics together.
I know, and I get stuck with Joe. I mean, it's you can't win them all.
That was also my fault, but
I bring people together. Usually, it's in opposition to me, but I am nothing but. I create a consensus.
Yeah.
That's not nice.
A man of the people, I think, is, perfect description.
That's not very nice. If you guys are watching on YouTube, hit like, hit subscribe. Go to riverfrontcincy.com. We've got excellent, excellent write-ups of all of our local basketball, college basketball teams here. Bearcats, Muskies. Sorry, Tim, I can't list the Bearcats or the Muskies first. I just can't.
I wouldn't list teams that win the game first either. I understand.
It's okay. It's alphabetical. Final Fours title. Things. No, Miami, NKU. Excellent work by writers by Sean, by Ryan, by Tim, and
Jack.
Jack. Yeah. Well, I totally spaced. I was thinking what school is Jack? Jack Mueller. I should know.
He's
that
from he's from Chicago. It doesn't.
Yeah, and he puts a lot of stuff about the Cubs on his Twitter. So I think it's just subconsciously stuck in the back of my head to forget about this guy.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
So they played the playoffs this past weekend. Most of the games were just absolute garbage.
Yeah,
we'll recap them here just a little bit one by one. First game, Texans played Cleveland, and it looked like it was going to be a fun game for about a quarter. Both offenses were up and kicking and rolling in pretty high gear until Joe Flacco started throwing the ball to the Texans. I think we predicted that here last week, that his propensity to throw interceptions would bite him in the ass, and it did. Back-to-back drives, he threw pick sixes. Texans won 45-14. C.J. Stroud, unbelievable, 16 of 21, 274 yards, 3 touchdowns. Tim, we'll start with you. Any thoughts on that game?
Well, first off, where the hell was this Browns defense when they played the Bengals in week one this year? Really would have appreciated that team showing up, but... realistically, and the other thing is, what is with Houston Texans rookie quarterbacks beating AFC North teams in the first round of the playoffs?
Yeah,
I accept this one, but the other two,
he's no TJ Yates.
I will turn this real quick. I will say that you know, my X's and O's knowledge is not elite by any stretch of the matter when it comes to football, but there's something about CJ Stroud where he is just must watch. His talent level, his ability to make all the throws, extending the play. There's so many things I like about him. And, you know, obviously we're going off of recency bias, but when you watch him play, and I understand I went by comment that I'm going to make here that it's a difference in talent on team levels. You kind of really wonder how did Carolina fuck this up? Because that was like, maybe it's just like the, you know, the Alabama hype was what kind of like made the decision. But watching Stroud compared to Bryce Young, and I'm not giving up on Bryce Young by any stretch of the matter, but you can just see there's a total difference in talent level right now.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. CJ Stroud, to me, for a young quarterback, what I find so impressive for CJ Stroud is that his ability to know when he needs to create extra time and use his legs, because he is an athletic weapon, but he doesn't use that as a go-to thing. He wants to throw from the pocket, and then when he needs to create extra time, he does. For young quarterbacks, normally they have a hard time differentiating between the two. So you'll see young quarterbacks that either run way too much or never run. They never create that time. I feel like CJ Stroud's been in the NFL for 12 years. I mean, he just knows. He just knows when to buy the second or take off and run. I mean, to me, I think if you go back and look at what was that, the national semifinal against Georgia, and he ran the ball more than he ever had because he had to do that. And that's just carried over to the NFL for me. I think he just makes the right decision, and he looks like a wily vet. I mean, he really is. It's supremely impressive.
You know who his game reminds me of? Joe Burrow. Just a lot of anticipation. He's got a good arm. It's not, you know, people knock Burrow. Burrow's arm is perfectly fine. The anticipation, he's got the ability to move the pocket or to escape the pocket or step up in the pocket, just manipulate. It just reminds me a lot, and I hate saying it because I'm not an Ohio State fan, and that's where, you know, Burrow started out. But just a lot of similar characteristics, and people are, you know, going to knock him because they probably knock him at some point because he has pretty good wide receivers. With, well, granted, Tank Dell wasn't there, so I can't give him too much credit for there. But yeah, just fun guy to watch, and I hated seeing him throw the ball over the yard against the Bengals. But man, they absolutely lucked out on that one. Thank the Browns for that for taking Deshaun Watson, so they'd have the opportunity to draft that guy.
Yeah, he's
the gift that keeps on giving. How hilarious would it be if the Buccaneers and the Texans meet in the Super Bowl, and it's the guys pretty much you picked Deshaun Watson over these guys bowl?
It's it kind of looked that way for a second there, right? How impressive Tampa looked on Monday night. I know the Philly team really kind of hit like a really big downward spiral after the Chiefs win, but you could certainly make the case that you could see that happening.
Yeah, and we'll jump into that game here. But Bucks destroyed the Eagles 32-9. I hate using the word choke. Absolutely hate it. I think it's a terrible word, and it discredits what the other team did. But how did they go from 10-1 to start the season? They finished 1-5 down the stretch and boat raced by the Bucks, who Bucks aren't a good team. They won a terrible, terrible division. Like, they had the same record as the Bengals, and they got to play the Saints, the Falcons, and the Panthers six times this year. Greg, what do you think happened to them?
Well, to me, I mean, it has absolutely nothing to do with skill or talent. I think it's all mental. I think you saw a locker room that was no longer playing together. And I think this is the clearest instance I've ever seen of it. To go 10-1 and just roll through teams. They lost their offensive coordinator, Shane Steichen, last year, and I just don't think that these players feel the same way in Philly as they did last year. I don't think they necessarily like Sirianni to the point where they don't want to play with them. And this is, we've talked about this on the show, this is one of the reasons why I think Zach Taylor's done a phenomenal job. The locker room is tight. I mean, it's a tight-knit group. And if you want to win football games, you have to have a tight locker room. And that's something that you'll never see on the Madden ratings. It's something you'll never see, you know, you won't see a whole lot of it in the newspaper, but what happens inside your locker room is vitally important to your football season. And I just think the Eagles lost the locker room, and I don't think they were playing for each other. And I think that was pretty evident with their lack of tackling and just real just effort in general. I just don't think that they are – they don't love being together right now, which is – that's a major problem.
I feel like they got old fast, like really, really fast. Like, you know, these same guys were like Brandon Graham, Jason Kelsey, Lane Johnson. We were like, oh, yeah, those guys helped them go to a Super Bowl last year. This year it was like they looked old. They looked like they could keep up at times.
Yeah. Yeah, there was a lot of the same core guys from the Super Bowl run a handful of years ago under Nick Foles that are still there. Kelsey told his locker room that he's hanging them up. He apparently went on his New Heights podcast and said he hasn't officially decided yet. That was kind of emotional spur of the moment after after a tough playoff game. If he does hang them up, I mean, Hall of Fame center, one of the best to ever do it, forever a Bearcat. But I mean, just awesome, awesome guy. Kudos on a fine career. But go back to what Greg was saying about them losing Shane Steichen. But they also lost their defensive coordinator and Jonathan Gannon. It's why the Bengals stress the continuity that they've had since Zach Taylor's been here, having the same offensive, defensive, special teams coordinator every year. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. I think Brian Callahan's pretty much has one foot out the door already. He's been interviewed for four teams, and Titans are going to interview him for a second round here shortly. But that stuff matters. And as much as everyone says they want to fire these coordinators or these guys, you know, these guys haven't done a good job, and then people just throw, everyone needs to lose their job after every bit of tough play or a loss or, you know, any bit of adversity. Players, like, you need that continuity. Look at the Browns over the past 20 years since they came back into the league, 25 years. They go through a coach every 2 years. They fire coordinators left and right. They go through general managers. They have zero continuity. That's the main reason why they haven't been able to sustain anything, because they can't keep anything going. Let a plan work out. If it's 3-4 years in and they're still struggling, cool, you tried their vision, it didn't work. But firing guys after, you know, Chudzinski lasted 1 year, Mike Pettine, Hugh Jackson lasted longer than he should have, and that's okay. Hugh Jackson went winless, and they went 1-15 the very next year. But
Eric Mangini,
I can't even remember all the names of the guys.
So many.
Chris Palmer lasted, I think, the longest, and only because he had the longest leash because he was the first coach when they came back.
Yeah.
Well, so. I mean, and just look at Cleveland. If they would have just kept some continuity, I mean, imagine Baker Mayfield on the Cleveland Browns this year, and you have all those first round picks back, and this roster's already loaded. If you add all that talent in and you have Baker at quarterback, I think if you have Baker at quarterback right now for the Cleveland Browns, you could arguably be talking about them as a top two team in the AFC. So I completely agree. I just think that they give up on some things way too fast. And if you look at the Bengals organization, which kind of had some of that similar stuff where they were bouncing around, Marvin Lewis, although, you know, we don't all love it, him sticking around for that long kind of settled everybody down and kind of calms down the whole entire franchise. And now you can start to have, you know, beliefs and core values and things that you believe in. So I just think continuity sometimes, you know, pulling that trigger way too fast, playing Monday morning quarterback, you got to be careful.
Yeah. I think Baker Mayfield is I won't say product, but he was judged on his draft position and not by his production, because he was 1-1 and he didn't perform like you want a 1-1 guy. I mean, 1-1 is Joe Burrow. I mean, yeah. Trevor Lawrence is underperforming his 1-1 position if you ask everyone down in Jacksonville.
He's Drew Sample of the Bengals at a different position.
Exactly.
Everybody hates on Drew Sample because he was a second-round pick, when in reality, I mean, if he was a fourth-round pick, he'd be a home run.
He'd be a steal.
Yeah, if Baker Mayfield were drafted one round later, were drafted where Andy Dalton were drafted, and Andy Dalton, I think, is a good comp. Andy Dalton, when he had a loaded team around him, they were absolutely rolling in 2015. He was in Hall of Fame, MVP consideration before he broke his thumb. So, and that's, yeah, you want a quarterback who can elevate the play of those around you instead of the one that has to be more of just a, we'll say, a point guard, a distributor. But you can win with a distributor. Nick Foles has a ring not that long ago. Yeah, obviously you want that home run, that absolute greatest of all time, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes guy, but there aren't a lot of those guys. So, well,
and you think about, like, just look at another AFC North quarterback, Lamar Jackson. He was taken at the end of the first round, okay? Yeah. Final pick of the first round. Other than an MVP, him and Baker Mayfield have accomplished the exact same things.
Yeah.
They both have one playoff win, or I guess Baker now has two, I believe, where Lamar only has one. Well, because Lamar was drafted 31 picks later, Lamar's the greatest thing ever. If Lamar was number one overall and he has one playoff win after 5 years, is that not – that's underachieving.
Yeah, yeah, so, there'd be a few more questions.
Yeah.
No. On the second game of Saturday's playoffs, Kansas City and Miami. Kansas City won 26-7. It was kind of a snooze fest. Miami had 8 drives, 4 punts, 3 turnovers on 3 turnover on downs, and an interception. Kansas City has fallen back on how they did against the Bengals, settled for a lot of field goals. One touchdown, two touchdowns, four field goals. Yeah,
I got like, you.
I'm not mathing right. I'm not looking at the score, at the box score. Neither of those teams impressed me. I don't think Miami gets out of, or I don't think Kansas, Miami definitely isn't getting out of next round because they're not in the next round, but Kansas City, I don't see them going to Buffalo and winning.
Where's the breaking news tab? Breaking news, Miami will not make it to the next round. They're not going to make it. I think when you look at the Chiefs, this is, here we go. Yes.
Yes. It looks like the Daily Show.
Yes. It's amazing.
Tim, since the last time you were on here, we have upped our budget and we have we have higher production values now, breaking news bumps and everything.
I need to talk to somebody about getting these on my shows.
Yeah, welcome to the show. Welcome to the show, baby.
Yes.
But when you look at the Chiefs, what's amazing is that they have to play a certain way and kind of grind out victories. This is such a different Chiefs team than any of the previous years with Mahomes. This is not a great Chiefs team. This is a very good defense. They have an above average defense, but a below average offense. And Andy Reid is playing to that strength. They're not going out trying to score 35 points. They'll eke out field goals. They'll kick field goals. They'll do what they have to do to get points on the board because they know they're not that good on offense. I can't wait. I can't wait to see Mahomes go down in the playoffs. It's going to be unbelievably satisfying. To go into the Dolphins, the most overrated team in football, maybe, in a long time. They have one win against a team with a winning record.
And boys, that was, over the past 30 years.
Yeah. Well, they have one win against a team with a winning record, and that was Dallas. The whole season, they beat one team with a winning record.
And it was they barely beat them.
And that was on a last-second field goal in Miami. Now, your one winning record team that you beat was Dallas. We'll get to that game in a minute. There's just not much for the Dolphins to really ride on as being a good football team. They were horrible against good teams. They were great against bad teams.
Yeah,
they are what they are.
Yeah,
I think I'm at the point too with like because they're at the point now where they basically have no choice but to pay Tua. And are we sure that that's what we want to do? Because when I watch him again, this is, you know, the Burrows, the Mahomes, the Strouds. Yeah, I'm putting Stroud up there already. The Josh Allens. and then you see him, and it's like, I appreciate he's left-handed. Team Southpaw's for life, you know. But also, it's like...
You're outnumbered, Greg.
When it's like, I don't trust him in, you know, negative 14 in Kansas City, but I don't know if I trust him in 85 in South Beach either.
No. Let's just fathom this thought, okay? Tyreek says he wants to retire fairly early. When Tyreek Hill is off that team, and you're talking about arguably the best receiver in the game, of course you can throw Justin Jefferson and, oh boy, you can throw Justin Jefferson and all these guys in. There's a ton of great receivers, but Tyreek Hill is definitely in the top two or three without question. If you take him off that Miami team, how bad is that offense?
I love Jalen Waddle, but yeah, it's steep bad. Drop. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, there was talk for a little bit that their wide receiver core was up there with the Bengals, and I just don't think, you know, first off, the Bengals wide receiver core didn't play it to the Bengals wide receiver core levels, but Jalen Waddle is a good complimentary piece. He's not a 1A, 1B type guy with Tyreek. mentioned about it just a second ago. Green Bay absolutely kicked the crap out of the Cowboys, 48-32. It was not that close. It was 48-16 before garbage time. Jordan Love had almost an exact same line as C.J. Stroud. Freakish. Yeah. Same 16 completions, 21 attempts, 3 touchdowns, 272 yards to compare to 274. Let's Green Bay keep doing it. I mean, 30 years, 3 quarterbacks, and Love, I mean, Love doesn't belong in Brett Favre or Aaron Rodgers orbit yet, but guys had one season as a quarterback after sitting for, I think, a year longer than he should have, but God, it looks like he has it. I mean, he looks like he's a legitimate franchise quarterback.
It's amazing. I mean, what the Packers have done.
You can't plan that shit. It's luck.
Yeah, who are their weapons? Who are those guys?
Right.
What's amazing is what Green Bay did around him in basically zero time. I mean, in no time. Christian Watson, Romeo Doubs, Dontavian Wicks. You got Luke Musgrave. You have Tucker Kraft. That's all in 2 years. And these guys are not just young guys that could be good here soon. They just interchange all of them, and they can all play. They can all – Jaden Reed, how do you forget him? I mean, there's so many weapons that they have that are young, other than the running back room with the quad father A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones. But Aaron Jones looks like he's playing like he's 24 years old. I mean, he looks young. So the Packers rebuilding that offense as quickly as they did, just phenomenal. The one thing I think you do have to talk about when you talk about Green Bay putting up 48 points and it's going to get overlooked is the Green Bay offensive line. I mean, you didn't see Micah Parsons in the backfield making all kinds of plays. They did exactly what they needed to do to beat Dallas. That's neutralize them up front and then just pick apart their secondary that's completely overrated and overmatched. And they won up front. And then it was just Jordan Love throwing to just wide open receiver. I could have made some of those throws.
Yeah. It was kind of funny if you like watched a lot of the game. There were situations where you could see that Micah Parsons was just getting the crap kicked out of him just because of his pass rush. That at some points they were just like backing him up in coverage just because like just take a breather. Just take a second. Like
Well, there's three things in life you can guarantee to be true. Okay. Death, taxes, and the Cowboys are gonna flounder in the playoffs. I mean, that's just it's a fact. I mean, if you how can you be a Cowboys fan? I mean, you think it's bad being the Bengals, at least for all those years, we just didn't make it. Yeah, we're good. We're out. You know, hey, we got a high draft pick. Hell yeah, we're gonna draft somebody cool. AJ Green's coming in, you know, whatever. The Dallas Cowboys are drafting 20th every year and have no shot to win. None. And I think the last point you gotta talk about with the Cowboys is the starting quarterback for the Cowboys next year will be Trey Lance. I said this a while back when they made the move for him. They're not going to pay Dak Prescott 50-something million next year to not win playoff games. You know how Jerry Jones is. You don't win, you're out, which, I mean, is why he, you know, blows up the team and restarts every 5 years because they never win.
Yeah. Do you think McCarthy's going to be gone? I know there's talk about, and we glossed over it real quickly when we were talking about Eagles, but there's talk about Sirianni and there's talk about McCarthy being fired. Do you think either of those happens? There's already a ton of guys. There's already 8 openings right now.
I think Sirianni is probably more likely. I think McCarthy, Jerry Jones, to me, it doesn't play around. So Jerry Jones, if he's going to fire McCarthy, it's because he has his eyes set on person A. And person A is going to be the Dallas Cowboys head coach. He doesn't make moves without knowing what, you know, what's coming next.
How many back channels has he already tried to use to get contact with Belichick?
Right. So I think if something lines up, awesome. He can get who he wants. If he can get who he wants, I think it'll happen, but I wouldn't be so certain.
I mean, who was Belichick's mentor?
Bill Parcells.
Who did the Cowboys bring in at one point, but paying a ton of money and ultimately was unsuccessful?
Drew Bledsoe.
Man, they ran through a ton of quarterbacks for a while there. Quincy Wilson.
Tony Banks was that dude in Madden. I won't hear any other arguments, all right?
I still remember Tony Banks as a Raven and as a Ram. Was he drafted by the Rams?
I want to say yes, but I can't remember.
He's one of the three Michigan State quarterbacks I can remember. Kirk Cousins and Jeff Smoker were the only two guys that I can ever remember that did anything in the NFL.
What a name that is, Jeff Smoker. I haven't heard that name in forever. Wow.
I'm not even going to mention what I guarantee his nickname was.
Yep.
The only really good game of the first round, Lions survived the Rams 24-23. Round of applause for the Lions.
Hell yeah, man.
First playoff win since January 5th, 1992 versus the Cowboys. And now, Tim, who owns the longest drought for advancement in the playoffs of all the big four sports?
Does he know?
Our beloved Cincinnati Reds.
Yes.
Yes. But you know what? That's going to change this year as well. So Miami Dolphins.
We're winning the wild card game.
Miami Dolphins, Sacramento Kings, get comfortable. So I'm stoked about the Lions here, and obvious reasons besides just like the whole underdog thing. Even as a diehard Bengals fan, my favorite football player of all time is Barry Sanders.
Absolutely.
My all-time favorite player. So, of course, I always have a soft spot in my heart for the Lions. And so watching them kind of do this game and just kind of Jared Goff for the fact that he was kind of they got rid of him because
discarded.
I would definitely upgrade to Matthew Stafford too. Don't get me wrong. But for the fact that they did it in like to his face, we're like, you know, we don't want you anymore. And he wouldn't beat not only the guy he was traded for, but the coach that traded him. Bravo, Jared Goff. Bravo.
Well, and that's what's funny is they were, you know, the Lions are going to be stuck with Goff. He's got a decent sized contract. They're going to draft, you know, they're going to work out something. They're going to draft his replacement and go from there. No. Obviously, he's not Joe Burrow, but they are the 2021 Cincinnati Bengals.
Yeah.
I mean, even down to breaking the gigantic, you know, incredibly long playoff win drought. It's just the way their first game is played out. Having to hold on there at the last second. Bengals had to pick off Derek Carr.
I was at that game.
Yeah, me nice. Too.
So I was at that game. On my couch. Funny enough, I was at the draft when Jared Goff got picked.
Really?
Oh, wow.
Yeah, in Chicago.
The amazing part is Jared Goff and Matt Stafford have, like, identical numbers.
I know.
Since the trade. Identical. I mean, it is unbelievable. It's uncanny. But I felt amazing for Detroit. I really did. Mm-hmm. The awesome part to me was the game ends and they shoot into the crowd. And I'm telling you, I'm getting cold chills thinking about it because it brought me back to when the Bengals beat, was it Oakland at that point or were they already Vegas?
Vegas.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, they were already Vegas. All right. When the Bengals beat the Raiders in the playoffs, I mean, dude, that stadium was a rockin'. And I mean, when the final horn sound, it was like everybody in the stadium just had their firstborn. I mean, there were tears. Dude, I mean,
I was hugging strangers. I was drinking beers with randos.
You did not care.
Guy handed me a Bud Light and I chugged it Stone Cold Steve Austin style.
100%. You could have been right next to your arch rival. And you're both Bengals fans and you've hated this guy your whole life. He bullied you in high school. And all of a sudden you look over and the Bengals win and you're like, I love you, man. I mean, it was that kind of moment. That's what Detroit had. The other thing I would like to say about Detroit is Dan Campbell.
Rules. Love
when we're going to give him, when we're going to blast him for just moronic decisions like going for two after the penalty, that was a debacle. But in this game, at the end of this game, I think this is a massive thing. There was a minute. It was the 2 minute warning. So there was 2 minutes left. First play after the 2 minute warning, the Rams still have a timeout. So they can still get the ball back. What does Detroit do? A pound it, grind it. We're going to knock you in the mouth kind of team. Bam, throw the ball, one first down, ball game. They went and won the game on first down. They didn't try to milk the clock and give them the ball back with 40 seconds left when a field goal beats us. No. Dan Campbell said, we're going for the win right now, boys. If it's incomplete, we're going to be in real trouble because they're going to have now a minute 20 to go get a field goal. He risked it all, which he's done numerous times.
Yeah.
But, hey, when it works, it works. So you got to pat him on the back. That to me was an incredible call that takes a lot more kahunas than people realize, because if you give the ball back to the Rams with a minute 20, you're probably losing that game.
So that was the Bengals versus the Chiefs last year when the Bengals had third down and threw it downfield to T. Higgins, who makes the completion, and then bam, you victory formation, and that's game.
Yep.
Yeah, I think the other thing we have to take a test to as well for Detroit that just have like an unbelievably unfair home field advantage is when you have all those people in a dome who are excited and want your team to win and Lose Yourself comes on.
Yeah.
Oh my God. How can you not be ready to run through a wall? Yeah.
70,000 people. You better lose. Yeah, absolutely. Like,
well, they showed Eminem, and that came on. That whole place just went nuts. I was like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
That was one of the coolest pictures I saw from the whole thing. You had Barry Sanders, Calvin Johnson, and Eminem all on the sideline. Just Detroit legends. It just tells you how much of a moment this was. Yeah. I mean, Calvin Johnson retired because the Lions were so bad, essentially.
Yeah.
Right? Barry Sanders retired because the Lions were so bad. He was an average Barry Sanders year away from breaking Walter Payton's all-time rushing record. And that's why anyone who says Emmitt Smith was the greatest because he had the most yards, I tell him, shut the fuck up.
Yeah.
Well, Emmitt Smith was Pete Rose.
How cool is that?
Played a long time. Really good. It was great. But compiled numbers. And yeah, everyone knows the real GOAT was Barry friggin' Sanders. Also, I think he was better than everyone talks about how great Bo Jackson was in Tecmo Super Bowl. Barry Sanders was better.
I like it.
I picked the Lions a lot.
Better in Tecmo Bowl?
I think he was better in Tecmo Super Bowl.
Wow. That's a bold statement, man. You're going, that's bold.
I picked the Lions a lot. No one picked them. Nobody picked them. They had a decent defense. Tracy Rocker. They had Rodney Pete and a lot of wide receivers. Rodney Pete was okay, but they
Herman Moore and
Herman Moore, Perriman. They were a fun team to play, and I used them a lot. So, last game of the playoff weekend, well, not technically not the last, but the next to last game was Buffalo beating the Steelers. Not a whole lot to say about that. It was another just kind of crappy game. Buffalo got up big. Pittsburgh tried to claw back into it. Mike Tomlin can't win in the playoffs anymore. Great, he finishes over 500 every year, and apparently he's not going anywhere. So next year you can write him down for 9-8, 10-7, and they'll be gone before the divisional run.
And when someone asks what's your status with the team, he'll leave another press conference.
Yeah, that's. I get you. Just got done with a hard fought game. Your season's over, and I don't know if the media has to ask that question at that time, but. You know that question is going to come either immediately right after or Monday morning press card. I guess Tuesday morning press conference is a Monday night game. Like, just I don't have any comments on that. You know, our season just ended. Whatever. There's a much better way of handling it. But this is also a team that has zero. Just based on what I was trying to say here, but I have zero responsibility. I mean, look at George Pickens. Look at their coaching staff when they played the Bengals in the playoffs. Mike Munchak pulling people's hair. Joey Porter getting in the middle of the Bengals in the middle of the field. And you look at all the fun stuff Antonio Brown did. There's zero responsibility, personal responsibility on that team. So why start now?
Maybe that moment actually ended up being a good thing because they haven't won a playoff game since.
Yeah.
This is winning cures all. When you're winning in the playoffs – and your team, your coaches are pulling another player's hair, and Joey Porter's on the field, and all this dumb shit. When you're winning games, it's Pittsburgh swagger.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. When they lose, it's you're unkept. Which I agree with you. I think this was just brewing underneath for all these years. But I mean, can we really blame Mike Tomlin? I mean, if you go 10-7 with a combination of Kenny Pickett, Mason Rudolph, and Mitch Trubisky, I mean, good night, dude. They're all terrible. I mean, they're all horrific. So to go 10-7, it's tough. It's hard to really bash Mike Tomlin too much, other than for the antics, the George Pickens stuff and some nonsense.
I mean, he's a damn good coach. I
agree. If they fire him, I think that would be a bad decision for Pittsburgh because they have no direction.
He was great in Higher Ground. He was great in the program. He was great on House. But, I mean.
That's one of my favorite shows of all time, House. I think I've seen every episode.
He was an unbelievable Willie Mays Hayes. You're right.
He was the second best Willie Mays Hayes. I'm sorry.
You're right.
Well, Wesley Snipes. Funniest thing about Wesley Snipes, like, he's been in two sports movies. And each movie, everyone talks about, he's this great athlete, but man, he just couldn't do this or he couldn't do that. The scene where he gets out of bed and has to race the jumps in the foot race in Major League. He's just really slow. Everyone had to pretend like they're running really, really fast. And Ron Shelton talks about during White Men Can't Jump how he was just a terrible basketball player. Like, you're just being nice. He's not a good athlete. Like, the guy's in incredible shape. I mean, you look at him in Blade. The guy's, incredibly, like, strong, that You can say he's not an athlete. Like, he just got put in roles because he was a guy that matched the character, like the physical characteristics of the player that you were looking for. That was it.
I was okay. Moving on.
Quick on to that. This weekend's playoff matchups. Baltimore hosts Houston Saturday at 4:30. Do you think Houston can pull it off?
Okay. Yep.
Do you think Houston will pull it off?
Yep.
Great.
No, not really, but
okay. I hope. But I don't. I think it'll be tough. I think they can. CJ Stroud's good enough. They can pull it off. I think it comes down to the Texans' defensive line. How many numbers do they have to deploy to the box to be able to stop Lamar Jackson in the run game? If they have to constantly deploy eight guys to the box, they're going to be in real trouble. Baltimore's shown the ability to hit big plays. You know,
Zay Flowers is going to feast.
Intermediate to deep zone. If Texans can, you know, mix some things up on defense and you know, stick with a seven-man box majority of the time and then kind of try to guess correctly on when you bring that eighth man into the box and hit that guess rate at a high percentage, then I think they will have a chance. You have to force some turnovers, whether that's fumbles or some interceptions. They've got to force Lamar Jackson into some bad throws. And to do that, your D-line has to be incredibly, incredibly good. It's much easier said than done to get to Lamar Jackson and make him throw a ball rushed. You have to keep lane integrity. Your rush lanes have to be good. And you have to make sure that you mush the rush a little bit where you don't let your D-line get too deep. And you kind of just let Lamar Jackson stand back there sometimes in coverage, kind of like what we saw with the Bengals do against Patrick Mahomes a couple years ago in the playoffs in Kansas City in the second half, where, you know, a lot of rush and three, drop and eight, and just Mahomes sat back there all day, which was fine, but he eventually rushed it and made a bad decision, and, it worked out for the Bengals. I think you kind of have to do a similar thing to Lamar Jackson.
I think Baltimore is the best team in the NFL this year. Houston can beat them. I don't see them. I just don't see it happening. Other AFC game. Patrick Mahomes gets to play a road playoff game for the first time ever at Buffalo, Sunday, 6:30. I don't know what the weather's going to be like. I'm hoping it's kind of gross and snowy and everything. I hope Buffalo wins. With that being said, we talked about how the Chiefs have kind of gone to more defense first and just, I don't say game manager, but leaning more in the defense. The one trump card they have over every other team is they still have Patrick Mahomes at quarterback. So when you need someone, game on the line, you've got the best quarterback in the NFL to be able to make those throws or make the escapes and stuff like that. So
Buffalo wins this game by 21.
I hope so. I will be so happy.
Buffalo wins this game by 21. They've got all the motivation on their side. Everybody hates Kansas City. We're done with this nonsense.
Yeah.
The refs aren't going to give them all the calls. We're in Buffalo.
Yeah.
This is going to be a dog walk. I mean, it's going to be amazing to watch.
I hope so.
Agreed.
San Francisco hosts Green Bay Saturday at 8:30. I think San Francisco is too good. They're playing too well right now. Now, granted, having that week off definitely blunts their momentum, but I think San Francisco is too good. Quick thoughts?
I think Run CMC is going to have a hell of a day, and it's going to be enough to kind of put him over.
I agree. I think it'll be a good game for a majority of the game, but I think San Francisco pulls away late. This San Francisco might be the ideal team to have a bye week, because when they're fully healthy, just forget about it. I mean,
yeah,
they're the one team that can take down Baltimore, in my opinion, when they're fully healthy.
Playmakers at every level on defense. They got playmakers at wide receiver, at tight end, at running back. They've got a good, and he's slowly starting to bend me towards his way, quarterback in Brock Purdy. They're just solid at worst at every spot that you need to be solid. Last game of the weekend, I guess thinking about the last game, but the last game we'll talk about is Detroit hosting Tampa Bay, 3 p.m. Sunday. Someone asked in a press conference to Tampa Bay's head coach how they're going to be able to, and I don't remember the exact quote, but along the lines of how you're going to be able to handle playing in the cold in Detroit.
That's when there's a coach you can walk out. That's fine.
Detroit's been playing in domes for 50 years. So it's going to be a cold walk off of the from the jetway, from the plane to the terminal, and a cold walk out of the terminal into the bus, and then from the bus to the hotel to the bus to the stadium. That's it. You're playing indoors where it's going to be 72 degrees. They're fine.
I try to tell people this all the time, and nobody understands my logic, and I think it's very simple. I go to work, okay, and I get, and I, you know, I do a stream, and nobody sees me. All they see is my hands. I'm like a hand model, right? I go to work. I wear flip flops and shorts, whether it's 5 degrees outside or 70. And they, what are you nuts? It's so cold out. I know, but I work inside. I'm not outside. Yeah. I'm outside for the 12-second walk to my car. That's it. It doesn't make sense to me. I mean, I don't think they'll be too cold in Detroit. I think they'll be okay.
Yeah, I walk from my house to my car to drive my son to school every morning in shorts and a sweatshirt, and then walk back even when it's 5 degrees.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sucks, but it's going to be cold. When it's 5 degrees, it's going to be cold whether I'm wearing snow pants. It's going to be cold whether I'm wearing shorts, so I'm just not going to go through the hassle of changing.
Right.
All right. On to the topic of the day, and this is a fun one. My favorite movie of the entire decade of the 80s. Anytime I've been sick, since I was, I don't know, 18, 19 years old, whenever I got the box set trilogy on DVD, Back to the Future.
Are you, Joe, are you the only one here that was alive in the 80s? You were, Tim. Damn.
Very short time.
I had him. Damn, I thought I had him.
Very short time, though. I was all of 6 months.
I was made in the 70s. My mom was pregnant with me for the last month of the 70s. So, yeah, I'm a lot
really
older than
wanted Tim. You should have just lied. You can't just lie one time. I mean, come on.
I knew Tim was born in 89, so he couldn't have got it past me. So you were, God, Greg, you weren't even alive for the first two movies. You were alive by the time the third one came out, but Jesus.
Yeah.
Kids, good Lord. Anyway, Back to the Future 2, season in review in Back to the Future quotes. We'll start us off here. Greg, your first quote.
My first quote.
Say, what do you let those boys push you around like that for?
Well, they're bigger than me.
Stand tall, boy. Have some respect for yourself.
I lied. That was Tim's, wasn't it?
Yep.
We're awesome.
Take it away.
Tim, I'll let you go first.
That is in reference to the Bengals' inability to compete this year in the AFC North. And how irritating it was for a team that had so much potential and so much upside and so much, you know, expectations to just lay an egg throughout the season, the AFC North. I don't really count the one win because it was the end of the year when the Browns were sitting all their guys in the postseason. Very, very disappointing that they just let the division push them around.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, I don't know. They talk about the Bengals needing to build a team to win in the AFC North. When the Bengals went the other way to win outside the division, and they've done really well doing that. So I want them to go 3-3 at worst. I don't care if they go 6-0, 5-1, 4-2. Win the games outside your division. You just don't suck it up like they did this year, and they'll be fine. And again, Burrow was healthy for exactly one half of all the divisional games this year. So
he missed both Steeler games.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wasn't healthy the first Browns game, wasn't healthy the first Ravens game, and went out 5 minutes before halftime in the second Ravens game.
And they almost won the first Ravens game, if you're
right. Yeah, I mean, it was a 3-point game, and that was with a hobbled Joe Burrow. So that's, you know, they see what you have. They were winning. That Joe Burrow's last play of the 2023 season was a touchdown pass to put him ahead.
Yep.
So they're just fine.
Yeah.
Now we have Greg's first quote.
Hello? Hello? Anybody home? Hey, think with fly thing. Hello?
I love it. So anybody home, I mean, this really just goes to what I thought was kind of the real storyline of the whole Bengals season is the injuries and who's left. And it was not necessarily that we had a ton of injuries all at once, but it was just like where they happened and when they happened, the team just never got right. You know, Burrow wasn't right. Then he was right. Then Chase was out. Then Higgins was out. Then, you know, Burrow's back out. And then, okay, now we finally get Browning rolling. And then there goes DJ Reader. And then who's there? That's what it felt like at the end. So that's what that quote was kind of leading to is I just felt like, unfortunately, injuries kind of ruled the day for the Bengals season.
It was kind of a war of attrition. Again, like at every single step. I mean, Jamar Chase missed some time. Higgins missed a lot of time on the season with various injuries. The only spot that we really weren't banged up was running back. And I guess they were when Chase Brown went out. They said he was in line for a bigger role. I don't really buy that because he was healthy for the first Steelers game and got absolutely zero snaps. But again, on defense, they had injuries on the defensive line. They had injuries all over the secondary and bad play. So yeah, it was just wasn't their season this year, as much of a pain in the ass as it was.
Yeah.
All right, my first quote.
What are you looking at, butthead?
I swear to God, TJ Watt is Biff Tannen. I mean, that's pretty. He's kind of a bully, kind of a prick. All the cheap shots and dirty little shit. I mean, Biff Tannen is a big, strong dude that could kick the shit out of most guys. TJ Watt's a big, strong dude. He's on roids. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, step ahead. My apologies.
Jumping it. Come on, Tim. So anyway, but yeah, it's TJ Watt is Biff Tannen. You can't just tell me any other way.
I like it.
Second one.
All right. Well, I'll get this right this time now. Hold on. Damn StreamYard. All righty. So.
My calculations are correct. When this baby hits 88 per hour, you're going to see some serious shit.
That goes to the inability of the Bengals and the lack of speed that they need to kind of get their offense back into the next level. If you saw going through the year, Joe talked about it quite a bit through the season. This is a team that didn't do a whole lot in the speed categories. You really relied on guys like Chase Brown and Ja'Marr Chase. And obviously Ja'Marr Chase has that huge touchdown against the Jaguars. Chase Brown has a screen touchdown that next week. I can't remember exactly who the game was, but Colts. Thank you. So this is an off season where I think the Bengals really have the weapons in two. If this T. Higgins thing is true, that they're going to bring him back. And that's the game plan, and it's the mutual interest for both teams. Go get fast, guys. We know Tyler Boyd's probably played his last game as a Bengal. Time to go update and get some speed there. And that's what this team needs. Get that shit back up to 88.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, they drafted a couple fast guys last year in Charlie Jones and Yosavash. I think those guys are going to be good depth guys. I think Yosavash has the ability to step in and play a pretty big role. I don't know how that role is if T. Higgins ends up signing long term, because none of those guys are a slot guy, and Chase can play slot, but he's not want to waste his talents directly in the slot. But yeah, they need to find out to get some speed. So you're not relying on Burrow to throw these guys open. Tight end is a spot where, yeah, you're going to have to throw that guy open, but two of your three receiver spots are just slow footed or, guys that are more route, run great routes, but can't break off the big ones. So.
Yeah, I'd love to have a Green Bay-style receiver, Jaden Reed, Dontavian Wicks kind of guy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think the Bengals' offense would be tremendously better because of it.
Greg, for the amusement of our esteemed leaders, Nate Dotson and Chad Dotson, where'd Dontavian Wicks go to school?
That would be Virginia.
Yes.
Virginia. The
Cavaliers.
Cavalier, yeah.
All right. Greg, your second quote.
So why don't you make like a tree and get out of here?
This is simply for Irv Smith. just go. It was never good. I was baffled by this. I liked the Bengals signing. I thought it was going to be interesting if he could stay healthy. I was wrong. So the other movie this reminds me of is Friday. You got knocked up. To Irv Smith, I want to say, get the out. I mean, it's just he did nothing, not one thing to help the Bengals. He was as bad as you could imagine. And the play I'll remember from Irv Smith forever is fumbling on the one. I mean, that was his biggest contribution to the Bengals.
Yeah, and it's they can't go into this offseason and completely neglect the tight end room. Again, I think we're all pretty much in agreement. Tanner Hudson is a guy that you can stick a tight end one, and he'd do fine. What's funny is they actually had more yards and more completions to tight ends this year than they had the previous 2 years. It's just they had to use the entire room because they're tight end one and tight end two and tight end three, for that matter, if you count Mitch Wilcox, just weren't enough game changers to really do a whole heck of a lot. So Tim is frozen. Unless he just sent me a text that his screen is frozen, or otherwise, or he's really good at holding his face for a long time here.
He's really focused on what we're saying.
Okay, I got Tim back. Technical difficulties. All right. Now for my next flip. No idea why I did the multiple punches, but that was cool as hell.
I was gonna say, did you intentionally do that?
Freaking awesome!
I thought your editing skills were like amazing.
I know.
I was about to give you so much credit, but
not to give you your flowers.
I'm pretty good at editing. Ask Tim and Nate what I did to the one. We had a video and audio I had to sync, so I've gotten good. But no, that wasn't me. I don't know what the hell happened on that one. So that's Jake Browning's ascension into Bengals lore. People generations from now, they're going to see number six trotting out and they're like, that's Jake Browning. He's a dream. Okay, probably not. People are still drooling over his girlfriend, which, come on, grow up. She's an attractive woman, but let's move on. Let's be adults here, people.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's hard. It's hard to be an adult.
That's what she said. Sorry. Right. Tim, you want to quickly move us along?
Yeah, my final clip. Don't mind if I do.
Jump, it's Marvin, your cousin Marvin Barry. You know that new sound?
I don't know what happened to your...
That new sound... Wait, did it not play?
It stopped. Your new sound and then...
Oh, I paused it because I was moving to the thing. So,
oh, okay.
That new sound you were looking for is some of the stuff I think the Bengals worked in the Jake Browning that worked successfully we can bring into 2024 with Joe Burrow. And I know Joe Burrow prefers to play out of empty. I know that is where he's at his best, and I respect that. But with Jake Browning, you could see some of the things that really worked. Like, they did this really crafty, creative thing where, like, the quarterback lined up under center. It was amazing. I'd never
revolutionary.
Yeah.
Revolutionary.
So I don't want to get away from running empty by any means, because I know that's where Burrow's at his best, but I do think mixing a few things in that work with Browning could be very beneficial to the offense next year.
Yeah. And Burrow even alluded to that. These are stuff that they wanted to work in more as his calf injury slowed the progression of that, because it was harder for him to kind of push off, you know, out from behind center, but he also saw the value in it. What I also like that I saw not a bunch of, but some of, is having both running backs on the field at the same time.
Loved it.
Yeah. What I think would behoove them is to have Tanner Hudson on the field in running situations, so that when you see 87 trot out of the field, you don't automatically know it's going to be a throw, and and it's just absolutely pin their ears back. So that would be fun. Let me ask you, you're a coach, Greg. What would be the benefits and or negatives to the Bengals running out formation? And I'm not saying this being their main thing, but just mix it up from time to time. No running backs, three wide and two tight ends, and you have Jamar Chase lined up in the backfield. Use him more kind of like Deebo Samuel. I mean, the guy has the running ability. He's built like a running back from the waist down. You've got two tight ends there. You can motion Chase out. You can have him run wheel routes. Imagine him running wheel routes out of the backfield. Or just taking RPOs and stuff like that. I think that would be a fun concept, but why wouldn't they? Why shouldn't they do something like that, be more creative that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think it would be a fun concept. I think, you know, you still have to have the threat of, you know, Jamar Chase, which I think you could hand off the ball to Jamar Chase in some spots. So, I mean, you still have to have that threat. But I completely agree. I mean, the stress that kind of would put on the defense is tremendous, because, okay, we line up in formation A with two tight ends and Jamar Chase in the backfield, and you got a couple wideouts out there. Well, that can become somewhat of a power run formation with two tight ends. And then, you know, you can motion out and all of a sudden now it's empty. But is it really empty, or do I keep my two tight ends and do I have all day to throw? And now I protect Joe Burrow, and now it's a three-man route and I have all kinds of time. And then, you know, the Bengals could even incorporate what they did a little bit this year, and that's some delay routes from those tight ends. Drew Sample's first touchdown on that delay route was just gorgeous. I do think it would give the Bengals a lot of, flexibility to do some interesting stuff like that. The biggest part of that would be the matchups that you could create for Ja'Marr Chase.
Exactly. So
if I can get a linebacker on Ja'Marr Chase, that's amazing. And you know who does it the best is the Rams. The Rams for years have found a way to get Cooper Kupp matched up against linebackers, with whether it's with motion or he lines up in the slot.
Logan Wilson.
Tight to the line of scrimmage. I mean, if you can get Ja'Marr Chase on a linebacker, it's over. There's not a linebacker in the league that can cover him. I just think the Bengals need to do a better job of getting some scheme stuff where we can get some of our guys in preferential spots where Ja'Marr Chase isn't going against their number one corner with a safety over the top every single time.
Yeah, and even if they do have a cornerback or a safety on him, he's getting a free release if he's starting out of the backfield. You can motion him out of the backfield, or like I'm not trying to reinvent the wheel here, but again, I just think, and again, going on with Tim's thing, just creativity, and that's why I think it's would not be a bad thing if Brian Callahan gets one of these head coaching jobs. I would assume Dan Pitcher is going to be promoted, or I guarantee he's going to be asked to take over the offensive coordinator thing. But just having another voice to change things up. I think the offense got a little stale. They were trying to freshen some things up. It didn't go as planned because of injuries and everything the first half of the year. But it's good to have different voices in the room, just so everyone isn't just kind of doing the same stuff and just relying, well, we've got this great quarterback that can throw guys open. Let's just keep running that. So
the one thing that I noticed the most that the Bengals don't really capitalize on is the use of motion, where it really creates schematical advantages for the offense. If you look at the way the NFL offenses are working, San Francisco motions more than anybody. Miami, they were explosive on offense. Now, they didn't play great on defense, but they were explosive on offense, a lot of motion, and they get big plays because of it. The Bengals have to do a better job using motion when the motion actually matters and creates something. Too many times you see the Bengals motion and you know what the play is, I know what the play is, and the motion doesn't mean jack shit. So give me some motion with some purpose.
Exactly. All right, Greg, on to your last quote.
Hey, Doc, we better back up. We don't have enough roads to get up to 88.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
I had to play the rest of the clip just because it's one of the coolest.
Amazing.
It's one of the greatest like last scenes of a movie. So much better before they added the to be continued in the home video releases.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm absolutely loving this, by the way. But Rhodes, where are the Bengals headed? Because this team has a lot of different avenues and a lot of different roads they can take from this moment right here on. There's a lot to diagnose, whether it's talking about free agents, T. Higgins, DJ Reed, so many big-time names that they have to decide on, and frankly, they have to decide which road they're going to take. Is Jonah Williams going to be back? Are we drafting an offensive lineman early? Are we going to try to get better on the defensive line? Are we going to try to upgrade our pass rush? Is the secondary complete? I just think there's so many questions. What road will they take? So that's kind of where I was going with that quote. I think there's a ton of avenues, and it's going to be super interesting, but the next 6 months are very, very interesting for the Bengals to me.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating, which, again, there's so many avenues to go in free agency and then the draft after that. It's who's going to come into play tight end. It'll be like this, how this offseason was interesting for the Reds for how they are. This is one's going to be cool for the Bengals for totally different reasons, but it tells you where they think they are, what they think they need to do for the next 4 or 5 years, because, I mean, they're in the prime of their window. They got guys that are starting to make big money, so.
And I just hope the Bengals can work on depth. I think with the 17-game season, depth has become more of a thing than it ever is. I know it's just one extra game, but look at the NFL this year. It was survival. Whoever survived with good players left was winning. So depth is super important.
Yeah, we talked about how many teams were playing well with backup quarterbacks. And there aren't any backup quarterbacks left right now. All the teams with backup quarterbacks, they're home. They're in Cancun right now. So,
yeah.
All right, we'll do my final clip here.
What made you change your mind, George? Last night, night, Darth Vader came down from planet Vulcan and told me that if I didn't take Lorraine out, that he'd melt my brain.
Yeah, well, let's just keep this brain melting stuff to ourselves, okay?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right.
Now, I'm not going to say that I broke into Zach Taylor's house dressed up in a spacesuit with a hairdryer and blasted some Eddie Van Halen. What'd you say to him?
Silence, earthlings.
Yeah. Somebody got to him about finally using Tanner Hudson. I mean, we saw this. I mean, Greg, we talked about this in preseason. He was the only tight end that was making plays, and it was one of those, like, this guy's jumping off the screen, making athletic plays, making good contested catches, and making plays after the catch downfield. And like, man, this guy, you know, he's going to be a good tight end too. I mean, if, you know, whatever happens, I mean, Irv Smith has issues staying healthy. This guy seems like he could be something and be useful. They did nothing for 10 weeks. He was active for 1 week until finally someone, whether it was Marty McFly in a spacesuit or whatever, someone finally got to him, like, yeah, we need to use that guy a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the one thing this reminds me of in life is, like, you know, when you haven't seen your niece or nephew for, like, 3 months, and, you know, they're, like, 4 or 5 years old, and you see them for the next time, and 3 months later, and you're like, oh, my God, you've grown, like, 6 inches. And the parents are like, really? You think so? I didn't even notice. Sometimes you're just too close to it. I feel like the Bengals were too close to it to realize that Tanner Hudson was obviously the best tight end. Yeah. And you need somebody that's not there every day to walk in and go, oh, okay, so 87's your starter, right? That's the guy, right? Yeah. No, actually, we got this clown. Really? He looks terrible. So I just think you have to have, I think they were just too close to it, is my guess.
I know what you're talking about. My son was 5 foot tall this time last year, and now he's like 5'8" and closer to my height than my wife's height. So, yeah, I know exactly what you're looking at pictures. Like, holy shit, how did that happen?
Yeah.
All right, guys, this was a whole hell of a lot of fun. Again, Back to the Future, anytime I'm sick, like if I've got a stomach bug, whatever, I will watch all three movies back to back to back. I might watch them like two times through back to back to back.
Oh, yeah.
Just fantastic. Just, I mean, one of those movies that just brings you back to being a kid and what, or in Tim's case, or both your guys' cases, bring you back to before you were born.
Yeah.
I'd be like me watching The Godfather, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe not that quite far away because that came out 8 years before I was born, but long enough before I was born. So Tim.
It is without question a movie and a series of movies that will live on forever and always be a classic.
I was only
let me ask, what's the second best movie?
To me, it's two.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I would have said. Two.
I have more questions about two, and I used to think that three was the better one, but now I'm like, I think two is the better movie. I just have to ask, why didn't Doc just wait until 2015, the day before? Because if he takes Marty out of 1985, there shouldn't be a Marty in 2015.
If you're watching movies for realism, you shouldn't be watching movies.
Yeah,
I've watched this movie about 750 times, and it's like, you know, it doesn't take away from the enjoyment of it. But
it's the same thing as when the murderer walks in the house and the people run upstairs every time. Like, hello, you know, go out the back door, you know, and then you're gone. Yeah. Don't run upstairs where you're locked in there. It's just not a whole lot of, you know, it's going to happen.
Exactly. Hey, Tim, what else is going on around the riverfront?
A lot, Joe. So, obviously, if you're on the Reds channel, you can check us check out the Riverfront Reds show with Chad and Nate, Late Night Reds with me and Ben. And now we have Red Leg Roundtable with Seth Janer joining the crew. His first episode is up on that feed, talking with Eddie Tobensee, one of my favorite Reds of my childhood. So,
such a good hitter.
Such a fun interview. If you haven't had a chance to listen to it, check it out. Also, shout out Joe's video editing for putting the slideshow together during the interview. That was really solid. We've got all of our game covers, like Joe mentioned earlier, on RiverfrontCincy.com. Riverfront U this week, we have a fun NBA show. They finally gave us something to talk about, the Pacers making a trade. So
big trade.
Love it. Love the trade. So excited to talk about that. And then, yeah, we'll be kind of doing our thing. We're not too far away. We're about a little over 70 days until the season starts. So
28 days exactly on Valentine's Day. Well, it'll be 27 days because this will be in your feed on Thursday. But on Wednesdays, we're recording Brett's Pitchers and Catchers Report in 4 weeks, 28 days from today. Cannot be more excited. Again, more Bengals feed, but NFL offseason just takes forever. Free agency's over in a second, and I get tired of talking about the draft. So I'm ready to hear Hunter Green popping some catcher's mitts in, yep. in some on some, doing some bullpen work. So also,
can I ask one question to Tim? What's the one offseason acquisition for the Reds? What's your favorite offseason acquisition? Because there's a lot to choose from.
There are. I think I really like the Brent Suter move. I think it was a really, really good move.
Yeah.
Okay. It was a smart move just to shore up. You know, they have a ton of left-handed options now. They got a couple guys that are probably going to be down in Louisville. They just signed another guy today, and I can't remember. It was Logan Gilbert. He can start and relieve. He's the guy who threw a no-hitter in his very first start in the major leagues, which is fucking ridiculous.
Yeah, that's wild.
We've come a long way from CNL Perez.
Yeah.
Who turned into an absolute gem for the Orioles. It was one of those, like, you see, like, this guy throws mid upper 90s and has some nasty nasty secondary stuff, but he doesn't know where it's going, and then he figured out how to throw it. And also, Tim, I want to thank you, because I asked you before the season, for the NBA season, give me a team to keep an eye on, because I haven't followed the NBA for years. I mean, you get older, you kind of drop off rooting interests. I mean, I was a Bulls fan from way back when. You told me the Pacers are a fun team. I was already going to see them with the Bucks, play the Bucks with my son, and they've lived up to the hype.
They're so fun.
Yeah, I mean, you hate the Halliburton's down for a little bit with the Sanders thing, but yeah, they made the big trade for Siakam. They're a fun team to watch, so absolute great call on that one. Guys, this pretty much perhaps puts a bow on this week's episode. We will be back next week. We'll be back the week after that. We're not going anywhere because we love doing this.
This is what we all see. We're not going anywhere. We're not going.
Tim, Greg, thank you very much, fellas. We'll see you all next week.